in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there. Good afternoon, all you Guy James Show listeners. Glad to have all of you along with us today. It's a somewhat rainy, gloomy day here in Southwest Florida. Raining a lot yesterday and today, but hey, we need the rain, so that's a good thing. It's just odd to look outside and see it kind of dark and gray and all that. That's weather we usually don't have here very often. Hey, thanks for joining us today. Always good to have you along. Good to know that you're out there. Looking at my little graph here, I see we've got a nice audience with us today. We'll try and have a informative and entertaining show for you. I can't talk today, so I think we'll just say goodbye, and we'll join you again tomorrow. Let's try informative. I'm being looked at funny. And an informative show, I think we always do that. We're not necessarily always entertaining, but then what we talk about sometimes isn't very entertaining. Wow, a lot has happened since we first, since we last got together last Thursday, right? Amazing things have happened. Yesterday, and of course we heard about it all weekend, the vote was coming, the vote was coming, the vote was coming on Monday, and if it didn't pass, this might well be the end of life as we know it in the United States. The credit market may further tighten up if it didn't pass to the point where there would be no credit. No one would be able to buy a home or a car. Millions of jobs being down the tubes. It was going to be a horrific event. But then, not to worry, we heard on Sunday, most of the day on Sunday, that, not to worry, they've reached an agreement and it will pass. So, just a little formality on Monday. They're going to vote for it on Monday morning, and they had to get it out of the way on Monday because Rosh Hashanah is today, and the House and Senate is not in session today. So they had to get it done yesterday. And ladies and gentlemen, this is a matter of the greatest importance, perhaps the greatest, most important moment in American history. They were going to decide in the United States House of Representatives yesterday where this country lived or died financially. Because if this bill did not pass, most assuredly, we would shutter our homes and be homeless and starve to death in a matter of weeks. That was kind of like the way it was put to us, wasn't it? In the stock market, after the vote yesterday, they had the vote, and don't you know, it didn't pass. It was a dozen votes short. I believe it was a dozen. If they'd had a dozen more, just a dozen more Republicans, they could have passed this thing. And it could have saved America. Could have saved it. But no. No, they let it go. It did not pass. Mr. Bush's plan, Mr. Paulson's plan, the plan that the Democrats and Republican leadership had agreed to, it did not pass. And then the blame game began. Well, it was that Nancy Pelosi's fault. It was that speech, it was that partisan speech she gave out in the halls of the Capitol building that really pissed off a lot of Republicans, and therefore they voted against it. They weren't going to let that Nancy Pelosi do that to her. They weren't going to let that Nancy Pelosi call them partisan names. No, sir. And if they had to cut the throat of the American public, every last one of them, they would, just to show that Nancy Pelosi that she couldn't get away with that. Sticks and stones and all. No, sir. Never mind that a hell of a lot of Republicans have come out today and said that that was not the case at all. But they didn't vote against it because of what Nancy Pelosi said. They're grown-ups. They had their views before they went into the room. Odd. The blame game goes on. And then the stock market yesterday afternoon, right before your eyes, and I must admit I was one of those that sat there and watched the ticker. It started going down and down and down. It got 300 points down, 400 points down, and at 4 o'clock when the bell actually rang, I think it was something like 595 points down, and it continued to go down and down and down, all the way down to 777 points, the highest point drop. Not percentage, the highest point drop in history of the Dow Jones. Lots of people saw their 401ks suffer. Lots of people saw their market holdings suffer, their portfolios suffer. The S&P was down. And oh my God, here we are, folks. It has started. The fall of the United States started yesterday afternoon, 777 points down, just as predicted by the administration and those that thought this bailout was a good idea or necessary. Surely, the 777 was a harbinger of things to come, going to show that the market was going to crash and burn. And all last evening, all of the talk shows talked about it, about, oh my God, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Something has to be done. Congress has to help. Congress has to jump in and bail us out. Who will save us from financial catastrophe in this country? Who will save us? And then talk began. Talk began about, well, maybe they'll try and save this bill. Maybe they'll try and bring it up again Thursday or Friday of this week. Maybe they'll try. And don't you know, this morning the sun rose in the east. The birds were chirping. The sun was shining. Some places, not here today. And it was a new day. And as I look at the Dow Jones right now, it's up 406 points. 406 points. What do you know? Maybe it wasn't necessary to pass that bill yesterday. Maybe American can live on without that bill being passed yesterday. Maybe there will be time for the leaders and legislators of this country to get together and figure out a real plan of what we ought to do instead of have a last-minute helter-skelter bill like the one that was on the table yesterday. We know that overwhelmingly the American public was against that bill. Overwhelmingly. The phones and emails of our Congress critters were jammed. Some said it was running 100-1 on the calls against the bill. My oh my. So it failed. It failed by some 12 votes. And isn't it odd that today, where it was running 100-1 against the bill, Americans are pissed that it didn't pass. You tell me. Go figure. How does this all add up? I do not know. The American public dead set against it, It didn't pass, and now they're pissed off. I guess I don't have a very good handle on the American public. I do, however, have a pretty good handle, I believe, on the McPalin-McCain campaign. Yes. And if they're not taking the dive, I don't know. It's actually kind of pathetic, really, it is. And we'll talk about some of it today. John McCain swooped into Washington last, Friday? Going to save this bill. Going to save it. It didn't work out so well. But he was going to save it. And thus save America from financial ruin. And then the public would realize that he was their savior, and they would elect Ms. Palin and him to take over the presidency and vice president. Well, he went to the meeting at the White House, and we are told by many that he said practically nothing, that he didn't even make his wishes known, hardly. He went back to his apartment in Arlington and talked to a people on the phone, he said. But he had to, meanwhile, suspend his campaign. Had to suspend his campaign because he's doing the work of the people and he could not possibly be running for president at the same time. And then he went to the debate, and we all know how that went. We all have our opinions about that. Frankly, I thought it was pretty pathetic. I thought it was boring. I would give an edge to Obama in it, but that's beauty's in the eye of the beholder, they say, and it certainly applies to that debate. But McCain back out on the trail. Now he's saying he'll suspend his campaign once again if he has to. Save America. America first, you know. America first. That's all he's thinking about. But he did take credit for it passing, you see. Before it passed, he took credit for the fact that it was going to pass. Yes, he did. He swooped in and convinced and cajoled and got everybody to vote for this bill. That's what he told everybody. And his handlers and his surrogates were out on the campaign trail telling everyone how John McCain was a real leader, you see, because he came into town and got a bill passed that it was almost impossible to pass, but with his great influence, with his wonderful reputation amongst his colleagues, he talked them into saving this bill and voting for it. Well, didn't quite go that way. And so the bill failed. And they had to turn around and take stock of what they'd said and say, well, it was Obama's fault. Yeah, that's the ticket. It was Obama's fault that it didn't pass. Damn right. Yeah, Obama. That's the reason it didn't pass. And it's 100% the Democrats' fault that we ever got into this position in the first place. Boy. Just wonderful. We'll talk a lot about John McCain and Sarah McPalin in this show today. Did you see Bush's speech this morning? Boy. I got an email from a friend who said Bush looked like a beaten dog. And I really don't think that's adequate at all. Don't think that's even close to being adequate. I don't think I've ever seen a public servant on TV look worse than he does right now. Do you think that maybe it's starting to sink into his tiny little brain just how bad he looks and what a miserable failure he and his administration have been? Do you think? Do you think it's finally occurring to him that he's going to be listed as certainly one of the worst, if not the worst, president in the history of this country? Did you see his new approval ratings? They range anywhere from 27% all the way down to 19%. Actually, I think genital herpes has a higher rating. Oh, man. It's incredible, but he does look like a beaten man. He has every reason to be to look worried like he does right now. He has every reason to look a bit ruffled because he is presiding over a bad time here in America, and he's got plenty to share in the blame of it. His administration does, if not the lion's share. Plan on talking a lot about that today. There are many numbers that this Bush administration has very little to be proud of. And yes, Lilo's saying on the chat room that history's going to vindicate him. Well, he thinks so, and his people think so. You remember when he had trouble once before, his people started comparing him to Lincoln and Churchill and a lot to Harry Truman. Now, with my apologies to Harry Truman, the beloved Harry Truman in many people's minds, certainly in mine, in my family, loved Harry Truman. Because some people recognize greatness right away and don't have to wait for history to travel on until we recognize it. But they started comparing him to Truman. And that was a good ploy because it is true that Harry Truman didn't have the greatest of popularity when he left office. And so Bush is trying to convince people that that's the way it will be with him. He won't be having great popularity when he leaves office. God knows he won't. But somewhere down the road, when history is written of this time, when children get their school books and their history books, the name George W. Bush will be in bold print. Because he will have been known by then to be the savior of the world by going to war against the evil Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda, and it was his foresight and bravery that took us into that fight and defeated terrorism and thus saved America. That's what he's counting on history to write. I think he's a bit optimistic. How about you? I do. But he did really look pathetic at that speech, my God. Oh, really bad. I'm still against this bailout plan. How about you? I've been against it, I think, all along. As I told somebody earlier today, how do you threaten a man who's got nothing to lose? They've come up with all these terrible things that might happen to the country. Terrible things that might happen to our country. But they haven't happened yet, and I'm willing to take my chances. I'm not willing to be forced to have something shoved down my throat, like many of them are right now. I think a fellow Floridian, Alan Grayson, said it about right. And let me read you what Alan said. He said, "We elect a Texas oil man as president, and then the price of gas triples. We elect the head of Halliburton as vice president, and we're mired in a war longer than World War II with no end in sight. We see the head of the largest investment bank appointed treasury secretary, and suddenly there's a need to fork over $700 billion in taxpayer funds to Wall Street. I'm beginning to see a pattern here." Well, I am as well. But you see, like they always say, when millions of Americans lose their home, it's free market forces at work. But when the millionaires get into trouble, it's a financial crisis. Don't you know? 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program today. I'd like to know how you feel about this bailout. I know a lot of people are worried. I know a lot of people were very disappointed when it didn't pass yesterday. I know the opinion of many is that, yes, we don't like the bill, but we're taking them at their word that it is necessary to get the credit market started back up again, not necessarily for Wall Street, but it's necessary to get liquidity into the financial markets again so that the people can start borrowing money again. People with lines of credit can be assured that they'll have enough for their payroll and their inventory needs, and farmers will have enough to borrow for fuel and equipment and especially fertilizer in the planting season coming up next spring. Many reasons why the bailout might seem like a good idea at first blush. Many reasons. But there are just as many reasons against it. Personally, I think it's theft. And we'll speak about that today. I think there's massive, massive fraud and corruption involved. Probably the likes of which has never been seen or known on the planet. But I am against the bailout plan. I have been all along. It didn't do anything about salaries of the fat cats on Wall Street. Oh, yes, it had a clause in it about golden parachutes. It only addressed future golden parachutes. And like I said, the sun did come up this morning, so why the urgency? Had to be done. Had to be done by Monday afternoon. Had to be. And I'm hearing, and I finally read a little piece about it a little while ago, that Newt Gingrich was heavily involved. I'm hearing that Newt Gingrich really, really was pressing a lot of Republicans to vote against this. Find it odd that I find myself on the same side as Newt Gingrich on this. I don't think this is what we need, and I'm no economist. I've had my econ classes like everyone else, like most everyone else. And I've made great effort to try and understand all this as best I can. But I really have made the statement that I don't think any one man fully understands this. We've discussed the fact that investment firms and hedge funds and all that on Wall Street have hired physicists, actually, and mathematicians to make the formula so difficult that regulations can't ferret out fraud and corruption. There are people at the heads of some of these companies that don't even know what their holdings really are because it's so complicated. So complicated. So I don't think anybody has a complete grasp of how big this thing is or how serious it is or not. I don't think anybody knows for sure. I think, personally, I think we need a big plan. Not this plan. Do you know there's another time in our history about 76 years ago when a man of tremendous stature took the oath of office in the United States, one Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and led a charge to bring this country back from financial disaster, to bring it out of dark and gloomy times. And he accomplished that. And a lot of people hated him for it. A lot of people accused him of using socialistic tactics to do it. A lot of people accused him of kind of penalizing the rich in order to help the masses in this country get back on their feet again. Well, if that's what happened, so be it. It worked, didn't it? It worked. And that's not to say all the policies and procedures of Franklin Roosevelt were perfect, because they were not. But thank God Franklin Roosevelt came along when he did. We might be a second or third world nation right now if he didn't. Came along with many work programs for people across the United States, employed hundreds of thousands of men and women so that they could make enough money to eat and claw their way back to financial responsibility and respectability. There were public works programs that worked on the infrastructure of this country that were badly needed. By the way, There's a parallel situation going on right now. They're badly needed in this country. We've got an infrastructure that needs massive repair. Bridges and roads and public works projects that need to be done. Could put hundreds of thousands of people back to work. People who would pay taxes. People who would make themselves credit worthy. People who would put money into the system. People who would spend the money they make on goods and services and therefore help the economy. I'm not an economist and I don't know the exact answer to all this. But Franklin Roosevelt took the bull by the horns and took this nation back into the right direction after the exact thing that's happening right now happened back then. Same thing. Capitalism was running away, running wild, unfettered, untamed, unregulated, and the rich were having their way with the American people. And it built and built and built until finally, just as now, things collapsed. So I think we do need a big plan of some kind, something like the New Deal. See, the market's up 424 points right now. That's good. I'm glad of it. If you're in the market, I'm happy for you today. It's been a finger-pointing game going on in Washington, and I hear a lot of our legislators and leaders say, now's not the time to point fingers. Well, I think it is. And first of all, let me say, from my Democratic point of view, that there are few involved in this without sin. Clinton administration, Bill Clinton, did some things I don't think they should have done. The Reagan administration, God knows, is probably at the foundation of this collapse with their trickle-down economics and their deregulation that they desired. The Bush administration, I think we all know where that one has been on all of this, has been a complete disaster for the American people. But there have been so many people who want to blame this on people who are not responsible. I got an email today. I wish I could find it here. Where is it? Here it is. And I find this to be the, and I've had this idea put in my ear many times lately by email and from folks on the phone and in person, that it's not Wall Street, it's not the Republicans and Democrats or Bill Clinton, it's those damn poor people. Let me read you this email that I got. There are people who are doing fine financially who take advantage of assistance programs. Here we go, assistance programs, because they can. But for example, after I had my second child, money was tight, and we actually qualified for state assistance on a portion of our groceries. We refused, because we knew with a little creative budgeting that we could make it through the tough times. Anyway, if we could trim the fat, and you know what he's talking about there, trim the fat, take away any social programs for those in need. That's the fat. And then reduce taxes. Boy, more money would be in the private sector, which would lead to more jobs and more economic growth, which in turn would lead to more tax revenue. Oh my God, I guess this person hasn't read that didn't work out so well the last couple of times that we've done it. But nonetheless, we'll keep trying. Let's pause for a break. We'll take this quick break and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
What have I missed? Living like this. Who think I get this for? Fancy house and my fancy car. Why you living like this? Together as kids. You are my best friend. All the trouble you got up in. See, I've been there. And I've been scared. I've been discriminated against and compared.
Don't get me wrong on this. I've been passing out my share of whom I think's to blame on all this. You know that. I couldn't let that go by. But this was a pathetic bill. There are many things about it that are absolutely terrible. I do appreciate the fact that they pared it down to only giving them about half the money now and maybe half later when a new president comes in. It didn't do much to curb Paulson's authority in the whole thing. Now, stop and think about that. Here's a man, Paulson, who probably won't be there very much longer. Why did he ask? I think he scuttled the bill right off, right then, when he asked for unfettered power to this whole thing. And believe me, with his past record, I don't think that Hank Paulson deserves that kind of credit. I don't think he deserves that kind of power. I don't think he's done anything except amass his own personal fortune by basically being a day trader on Wall Street. He has done well for himself. But his assessment of this financial trouble here in this country has been far from perfect. In fact, it's been he's batted almost zero when it came time to assure the Americans of what he thought might happen, what the Treasury Department felt what might happen in the future. He's been wrong on almost every count. So I do not understand the gall that the man had to ask for, and the president to go along with him on this, to give him like almost a dictatorship to lord over this thing. That's something that, something I don't really get. We were talking before we went to the break about how so many people like to blame this on something, anything, except what it should be blamed on. And while it is true, there are many factors involved in this financial difficulty that we find ourselves in right now. Many, many factors. It's true that a lot of people got home loans that shouldn't have gotten them. I understand that. I think we all do. There are people that bought in homes way over their heads. But they would have you believe that that is the entire problem. The conservative view is that, well, if those damn poor people, or people that if they hadn't bought those houses they couldn't afford, this whole thing wouldn't happen. It's their fault. It's their fault. They didn't have to take the money. Well, have any of you seen the film The Boiler Room? It's about how to con people, a movie of how to con people. Let me quote you Lisa Taylor from the AmeriQuest, a big, big loan company. AmeriQuest home loan agent, quoted in Los Angeles Times, February 4, 2005. She said, "It was unbelievable. We almost couldn't produce enough to keep the appetite of the investors happy. More people wanted bonds than we could actually produce." Morgan Stanley, she was quoted about Morgan Stanley and all this. The nation's appetite for loans was heavy. But companies like Lehman Brothers and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and IndyMac, a lot of them just got greedy, terribly greedy. It seems to me that well into the second year of this panic that we're involved in, the press is making the same mistake it made in the run-up to this debacle. They're focusing on Wall Street concerns and ignoring the simplest, most basic, but most important one, the breathtaking, and I've contended this all along, the breathtaking corruption that overran the U.S. lending industry, including and especially the brand names and the extent to which Wall Street drove that corruption. There is massive corruption involved in this. Let me illustrate. I had a friend send me a quiz. And let me illustrate what I'm trying to say here with a short quiz. Keep in mind the big financial companies, Citigroup, Countrywide, AmeriQuest, IndyMac, before they went down the dumpers, Merit Financial, New Century. AmeriQuest actually handed out copies of the movie Boiler Room as a training tape to people, how to take advantage of people over the phone. Countrywide partnered to sell its pay option arms with a brokerage owned by a five-time felon whose convictions included gun-related charges. IndyMac, get this, IndyMac actually forbade loan officers to check borrower income on certain loans. And AmeriQuest ran what they called the art department in its Tampa office, where documents were altered. New Century developed what they called FastQual, a program designed to approve borrowers in 12 seconds. And all of these people incentivized brokers and loan officers through yield spread premiums and other compensation schemes to put borrowers into more expensive loans. Bury them deep. And finally, Merit Financial had two kegs of beer at the weekly staff meetings, which were more like parties, congratulating themselves on burying as many people as possible into bigger loans than they needed. This was the modus operandi of many of these companies. Bury them and bury them deep. And, of course, you've heard the complaints about people who were blown out of homes they already owned. That's right, they already owned by Countrywide products. And take the example of a 64-year-old widow with payments of $300 a month on a 30-year fixed-rate loan. She's put into a 327 interest-only loan with a fixed rate only for the first 3 years of the loan. Never mind what it is, she couldn't afford the $800 payments before the rate adjusted in the state of Illinois. Ex-employees of AmeriQuest described 10 to 12-hour days punctuated by what they called power hours, non-stop cold-calling sessions to list of prospects, people that they knew had heavy credit card bills, and the goal was to persuade these people to roll all of their debts into new mortgages on their homes. Power hours. Brokers who made in a neighborhood of $75,000 to $100,000 a month doing this. And you ask about the movie Boiler Room, and AmeriQuest passed that around as a training film. It's like a cubicle for 150,000 square feet. The ceilings were 25 or 30 feet high. The elevator had great big graffiti painting, big open space. And these people in it, they lived mortgage. That's all they did. The deal. How are we going to get it funded? They knew, and I'm quoting one of these guys, these people didn't have a pot to piss in. They could barely make car payments, and we're giving them $300,000 or $400,000 house. One of the guys that put out these loans said it got to the point where I literally got sick to my stomach. That doesn't make the public absolutely blameless, because they're not. A lot of individual borrowers knowingly inflated their incomes and otherwise participated in what would be their own undoing in this situation. And as you all know, it's beyond question that a certain class of speculators took full advantage of this easy money and committed outright loan fraud to make these leveraged bets on the housing market. They'd go out and get investors and get a loan, take the equity right away, roll it over. Got many cases of that in court right here in Fort Myers, Naples area, Florida. So the borrowers aren't without responsibility in all this, certainly not. We're going to pause for a quick break once again. We'll be back in just a minute.
No more walks in the wood. The trees have all been cut down. And where once they stood, not even a wagon rut appears along the path. The brush is taking over. No more walks in the wood. This is the aftermath of afternoons in the clover fields, where we once made love, then wandered home together. Where the trees arched above, where we made our own weather, when branches were the sky.
Bill and I am only a passerby. We and the trees on the way back from the fields of play lasted as long as we could. No more walks in the woods.
Love is a secret that everyone knows. Love is a chime that rings when the wind blows. So keep yourself honest so it can grow. Cause when you've lost it, your heart turns cold. Isn't it so? I remember the first girl I really love her. However it hurt her, she loved me enough. I wanted to wander, she knew I would go. She shed a tear knowing I'd be alone. Wasn't it so? Chasing a rainbow, and she understood. She was a prophet. She told me I should follow my heart, like I'd been told. Seek out your vision before you get old. Isn't it so? I finally see how much she did love me. She set me free. Her last few dollars put gas in my car. Instead, promise to ride me wherever you are. From out on the highway, pick a road quiet. Always remember a simple little lie. Love is a secret that everyone knows. Try too hard to hide it, it never will show. Isn't it so?
Ah, yes, Stephen Stills. I love that song, isn't it so? 866-546-5254 here on the Guy James Show today. We're talking a little bit about the attempted bailout, or whatever you want to call it, the buy-in, bailout, many different names for it. Looking over our email, it came in during the show started. We got a good email from Marcus. Marcus always right on the money with this, and he and I are in agreement over this. Let me just read this to you. Unfortunately, says Marcus, I can't take full credit for this, but I do think we need to market our talking points as best as possible, so I pass this on to you, Guy. Just as the Republicans marketed the estate tax as a death tax, we need to market the Republican version of this bailout plan as a birth tax. For if this bailout goes through, kids will be born with a tax to pay their government for bailing out the upper crust in this country, while that same upper crust doesn't sacrifice a damn thing. I say let the market bleed a little. There's no real rush. And just say no to the birth tax. That's from Marcus. Marcus, thank you. Very, very well put. I fully agree with you on that. I certainly do. I, I think it's become overwhelming, and I'll concede, because it's true that we're, what, a year and a half or so into this credit crisis? I really believe that the evidence is being becoming overwhelming of a profound structural shift in the U.S. lending industry. And it's one that, well, it really institutionalized widespread deceptive practices and outright fraud. And I think we've heard a lot about outright fraud on this that was perpetrated on borrowers. And the borrowers are not totally without sin in this thing. But I think conservative critics of the so-called debt culture should at least factor that record into their thinking. And it's important to remember that this is not just the fault of one party or the other. It's certainly not. There's plenty of blame to go around on this. There's a guy named Mike Garner, who was recruited as an executive at Silver State Mortgage, Nevada's largest mortgage lender, from his previous job as a bartender. And Garner's new job was to send guys to cruise strip malls to buy up product, a financial product, from brokers like Gen Pizzio Russo, the boiler room guy, and sell it to guys like Morgan Stanley's Francis. Garner says he noticed that every month guidelines got looser to the point where loan officers refused to look at borrowers' pay stubs or W-2 forms in order to properly underwrite a stated income loan. Garner says then the next one came along and it was no income verified assets, so you don't have to tell people what you do for a living, you don't have to tell people what you do for work, and all you have to do is state you have a certain amount of money in your bank account. And then the next one is just no income, no asset. You don't have to state anything. You just have to have a credit score and a pulse. And actually, that pulse thing was also optional, like the case in Ohio where 23 dead people were approved for mortgages. And I realize that borrowers who signed the notes can never be let off the hook. No one knows what went on in the room of each one of those closings. Although the reports we've heard over the last several years certainly let us know about plenty of examples of loans made to stroke victims, people retarded, the elderly, the illiterate, people who don't speak English. And it is important to remember this, a broad statement to be sure, but it pays to remember that the borrower is the amateur in this equation. The borrower is someone who usually, in most cases, might execute a mortgage twice in their lifetime, maybe three times, who knows. A lender's going to do it many times just before lunch. So they did use these boiler room tactics on a mass scale against a class of financially vulnerable borrowers, which subprime borrowers are. There's a lot of blame to go around. To be sure, many people applied for loans that should not have. That I will grant you. But I'm here to tell you that most figures point to the fact that there's only about 10% of the problem involved in that. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. Do all of you know how all of this works? All of this, I shouldn't say anything that broad. You know what leveraging is? You know how leveraging works? Leveraging means something like this. You sell like $10 million in stock. And then you use that money as the basis to take out a loan so you can buy $100 million in mortgages. You turn $10 million into $100 million. Then you go get rid of these mortgages. You issue mortgage securities based on these, and you sell those. And now you've got $100 million in cash. So then you can leverage that. You can go out and buy more mortgages, and you can take your $100 million and buy $1 billion worth of them. You've just leveraged your initial $10 million 100 times. And that really works. It works if you and your banks and the buyers of all your paper are greedy enough. And so you ask, why would the banks loan you $100 million on $10 million collateral? The short answer is, and it's the main answer in all this and how this happened, is that they wouldn't, for most of us, they wouldn't do that. But they would do it, and they did do it for these financial companies because of the fees that they collected and the interest they made off these transactions, and because they knew these companies, they thought they knew these companies were good for it. And this was all a whole lot easier to believe on the upside of that bubble because the value of the assets, these homes, kept going up. The market was going up and up and up, and there's no better example of it than right here where I live. So even if a few percent of these mortgages went south, so what? The house's value was greater than it was at the start, and the bank could sell it and start all over again. And the overall value of the mortgage package on which all this was based kept going up as well. So banks were making money in fees from writing the loans, and the companies they were loaning money to were precisely the ones who were buying these mortgages off and so that the banks could make more money in fees, yet writing more mortgage, and so it went. And it isn't hard to see how this got completely out of hand. And as for the derivatives, which are very pertinent to this discussion, we're talking about two types. The first that we've already mentioned, these are the mortgage-backed securities, and they're not really the mortgages themselves, but a financial instrument thingy based upon or derived from. That's where the derivative term comes from. And the buyers of these are not necessarily interested in the underlying assets, but the cash flow that it comes from it, that is the mortgage payments. They don't care about the assets. All they care about are the payments coming in. And we'll talk a little bit more about derivatives in the second half of the program if that doesn't bore you to death. 866-546-5254. But they've done everything they can to build this house of cards. It was intentionally built. They knew it was not on solid ground, that they built their castle on sand, and they knew that it would collapse. And they've counted all along on the American public on bailing them out. And is the American public going to do it? Is the American public going to stand for it? I think, personally, we're going to be pushed into it. We're going to be forced into it. I don't think we're going to have any say in the matter when it comes down to it. As we all know, and as they've admitted, the phone calls in many of these offices and the House and Senate office buildings were 100-1 against this bill. It's going to make it tough for the next president, whoever it may be, and it's looking more and more, and we'll talk about that next hour, looking more and more like it's going to be Barack Obama. McCain and Ms. Palin are tanking in the polls right now. I don't think they've seen the bottom yet. McCain's political ploy on all this bailout, buyout, whatever you want to call it, just didn't work. It was a disaster for him. And as you all know, the more times that Sarah Palin appears on TV, that's another black eye for that. Oh, man. I'm assuming by now you all saw Saturday Night. That's been played 7 zillion times on YouTube. Wow. Does that woman have Palin down or not? And Palin is truly an embarrassment to that campaign. And a lot of people are starting to realize it on the right now. People that were very stubborn in the beginning didn't want to admit it, but now they're saying it. And when you consider the fact that that was a decision by McCain, well, if he's going to have that kind of judgment, and we all know what kind of judgment he has by now, why then he's certainly not worthy of occupying the Oval Office and being in charge of the government of the United States of America. Certainly not. That proved it to me right then and there. I guess we're ready for the news coming up. Yes, we are. We're getting very close to that. So let's pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The stock market closed Monday hundreds of points down on the news that the U.S. House failed to pass a $700 billion financial system bailout package. The economic catastrophe caused by unregulated free market irresponsibility threatens millions of working people, as well as the entire U.S. financial system. Economist Josh Bivens at the Economic Policy Institute believes a bailout is needed, but it should be targeted to cushion the economic blow to working people.
Even a well-designed bailout is not a silver bullet that makes everything fine, but essentially it will transform what could be a real economic disaster back into just sort of the garden variety recession that we're in right now.
Ed Ott is executive director of the New York City Central Labor Council. He wants to see direct aid to the millions of people at risk of losing their homes.
Money in there so that people can refinance where it's necessary. We'd like to see them use the force of the law to suspend all foreclosures.
The AFL-CIO says the House bailout package fell far short of what working people need because there's too little relief for homeowners. The Labor Federation says it understands the very serious risks to working families of a financial collapse and believes there's need for a comprehensive government package to prevent it. But the AFL-CIO says it had serious doubts about the bailout package that was defeated in the U.S. House on Monday. Concerns over a turbulent economy left striking waste management workers in Milwaukee with few options during a third contract vote on Sunday. Jesse Russell reports.
The strike against waste management in the Milwaukee region of Wisconsin started more than a month ago. The 240 drivers and mechanics represented by the Teamsters approved the contract on Sunday by a 2-to-1 margin. In a statement, the Teamsters wrote, "The continued financial and personal strain took its toll on our members. With this vote, our members decided that given the turbulent nature of our economy, their family's future must take priority over holding out for a better offer from waste management. The 5-year contract cuts back on wages and health care benefits and establishes a new 401k program for the workers. Workers will return to work on Wednesday."
Sony Ericsson is cutting 450 U.S. jobs due to dropping demand for high-end phones worldwide. It's part of a plan to cut 2,000 jobs worldwide by the end of the year.
Here's today's economic report. A new study is out showing an increase in family health insurance costs for 2008. According to the study from Kaiser Family Foundation, the premium for employer-sponsored family health insurance is at an average of $12,680 annually. That's a 5% increase over last year, with workers paying $3,354 of the cost. In 1999, workers only paid $1,543 per year for an average $5,791 premium.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
He's practicing the politics of the past. John McCain. His attacks on Barack Obama, not true. False. Baloney. The low road. Baseless. John McCain. Same old politics. Same failed policies. Barack Obama supports a $1,000 middle class tax cut. An energy plan that takes on oil companies, develops alternative fuels, and breaks the grip of foreign oil. That's change we can believe in.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. Glad to have all of you along with me this afternoon here on another edition of the Guy James Show, coming to you live from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida, Fort Myers and Naples area. So glad to have all of you along on what is a fairly gloomy day here in Southwest Florida. But, hey, happy days are here again on the stock market today at the Dow Jones down on Wall Street, up 484 points that I can see so far. I don't know if the market's completely settled yet, but up 484 points, and that is a good thing for all of you that have financial interest in that. Speaking of numbers, now, these are as of yesterday, okay? I haven't added today's figures. Not naturally, the Dow is going to go up a little bit. I think it's up 496 points, the biggest point, one of the biggest point gains in history. So that's good for any of you who've got money in the market. But January 19th, 2001, the day before Junior Bush took office, the Dow Jones was at 10,587, and yesterday it was at 10,365. The NASDAQ of January 19th, when Junior took office, was 2,770. Yesterday it was down to 1,983. The Consumer Price Index was 175 when Junior took office. Now it's 219. Not good numbers. Not good numbers. The national debt during the 8 years of the Clinton years increased by $1.3 trillion to $6 trillion. The national debt during the Bush's 8 years increased $4.2 trillion to $10 trillion. Now it's going to be over $11 when they get this bill done, I'm sure. And to add a humorous note to all this, the PSSVP, that's the PSSVP index, on September 17th, that is the people shot by a sitting vice president. yes. It was one as of September 17, 1787, till January 1st of 2001, and we've had one since, so there we go. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. Those are pitiful numbers. And I really believe, and it's my opinion, that right now is what they're trying to do, what all the lobbyists from Wall Street and even foreign companies and foreign banks have descended upon Washington trying to get this bill passed, a huge handout to the wealthy in this country. And I really think it's probably the biggest robbery in the history of this country. And it's taking place right now. They're working on it in Washington, and I believe they'll get it done. And they don't even have to use a gun. They've got like 300 million hostages taken here, all you and I, and as Mike said, this birth tax. And so don't make any mistake about it. After they've already stolen $500 billion or more to line their pockets with all their war profiteering backers of the last 5 years, and after lining the pockets of their fellow oil men, to the tune of over $100 billion in just the last 2 years. Bush and his cronies, who are soon going to have to leave the White House, are absolutely looting the U.S. Treasury of every dollar they can grab before they go. They're swiping as much as the silverware as they can get on their way out the door. And no matter what they say, no matter how many scare words they use, and they use plenty, they're up to their old tricks of creating fear and confusion. And they do this in order to make themselves and the upper 1% filthy rich, and they've achieved that. They had a story in Monday's New York Times where you can see what the real deal is on all this. It says, even as policymakers worked on details of a $700 billion bailout of the financial industry, Wall Street began looking for ways to profit from it. Financial firms were lobbying to have all manner of troubled investments covered, not just those related to mortgages. Hey, Charlie, grab that old paper we got from a few years back that we bailed out this or that, when Joe made that terrible, bring that in on this. And at the same time, the investment firms were jockeying to oversee all the assets that Treasury plans to take off the books of the financial institutions. And that is a role that can earn them hundreds of millions of dollars a year in fees. Nobody wants to be left out of the Treasury's proposal to buy up bad assets of financial institutions. And unbelievably, and I hope the American people understand this, I pray that they do, and it is unbelievable, but Wall Street and its backers created this mess, and now they're going to clean up like bandits. Think about this. Rudy Giuliani is lobbying for his firm to be hired and paid to consult in the bailout. Isn't that good news? And as I've mentioned several times on this program, the problem is with all of this that nobody really knows, no one man, no small group of anybody, no big group, really knows what this collapse is all about, this so-called calamity. A lot of people think that nobody really knows. I mean, even Paulson. Paulson's the guy that brings this figure of $700 billion to the Congress. He's admitted he doesn't know the exact amount that's needed. He just picked up a $700 billion number out of his head, seemingly. The head of the Congressional Budget Office says he can't figure it out, nor can he explain it to anybody. I saw an interview with Kent Conrad, who's probably one of the best financial minds in all of the Congress. He doesn't know. And yet they're running around saying, oh, my God, you know, it's terrible. The Great Depression, killer bees, bird flu. We got to pass this thing today. We got to pass it. Sky's falling. You all heard that, the Chicken Little thing. And who's the sky falling for? There isn't anything in that bailout or buy-in package that's going to lower the price of gas that you got to put in your car to get to work every day. Nothing in this bill is going to protect you from losing your home. There's nothing in this bill that'll give you health insurance. There's nothing that'll keep your neighbors from losing their homes, thus driving the price of your property down. There's nothing in there. And you might ask, why did I bring up the health care? It does have a little bit to do with it. Many, many, many foreclosures, defaults and foreclosures going on with people's home mortgages are being caused because people had to file bankruptcy because of medical bills. It's not just too many working class people who went out and got mortgages they couldn't afford. After all, the number one cause of people declaring bankruptcy is because of medical bills. But this bailout or buyout or whatever you choose to call it is to protect the obscene amount of wealth that's been accumulated in the last 8 years. It's to protect the top shareholders who own and control corporate America. And make no mistake about it, is to make sure that their yachts and their mansions and their expensive champagne and their way of life go right on while the rest of America suffers and fights like hell to even pay the bills. And it might sound like class warfare to many of you, but I say let the rich suffer for once. Let them pay for the bailout. We're spending $400 million a day on the war in Iraq. Let them end the war immediately and save us another $500 billion. But your words and my words on all this are going to go completely unheeded because they will end up doing exactly what they want to do. And we will pay the consequences. These last couple of weeks of this high finance meltdown have just been absolutely amazing. What was it, last Thursday we saw the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history? And that collapse didn't even rate mention as the day's top news story. Just imagine what the stress level's got to be down on Wall Street these days. But at least some high rollers are finding relief in a far sunnier climate. Last week, found a report that several top Wall Streeters last week purchased villas in the Colony, a new Caribbean luxury project touted as Jamaica's most expensive gated oceanfront development on record. The villas run up to $7 million each and carry a $72,000 annual maintenance fee and maid services. They have 60 days of butler, chef, and maid services per year. And the best part is the villa owners pay no taxes on their property, thanks to a complex financing deal that involves an offshore special purpose vehicle based in the Cayman Islands in the notorious super rich tax haven. They have ways. And just 3 weeks ago, many of you have seen this story, I'm sure. America's largest savings bank, Washington Mutual, got themselves a new banking veteran CEO, Alan Fishman. And they announced, and let me quote the board of directors, said the board has great confidence in Alan's ability to lead Washington Mutual and to return the company to profitability as quickly as possible. 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, and this company has been seized already. Only 3 weeks ago, the board of directors didn't know what was going on. The board of directors of this company. Tell me that that's really possible. But things didn't work out quite right, so just days after handing this Fishman guy, the new CEO, a $7.5 million signing bonus, you all know that Washington Mutual totally tanked, and the Fed seized the failed bank and sold its savings operation to J.P. Morgan Chase at a fire sale price. And J.P. Morgan hasn't decided yet whether to fire Fishman, and if Fishman does get the axe, his Washington Mutual contract entitles him to $11.6 million in getaway cash. Add that to $7.5 million he got for a signing bonus. That comes out to what? $19.1 million for 3 weeks' work? I don't care who you are. That's not bad. But that's the kind of excess that we've been talking about that's been taking place, obscene wealth and excess taking place in Wall Street, and everybody just turning a blind eye to it for how long now? Washington Mutual lost over $12 billion this year alone on subprime mortgages. And we got a guy who wasn't responsible for that, admittedly. This last guy ahead of their company, Killinger was his name, he was responsible for that. But the new guy, 3 weeks, didn't even have a chance to get his feet wet, walking away with $19.1 million. Find that fascinating. One of the great Wall Street bailout debates has now ended. That They're going to try and change it to something different here now. Who knows what different? Will this new bill that they're going to bring up be a rehash of the one that failed? Or will somebody take the bull by the horns and really try and come up with something new, something solid, something really good that the America could get behind? I don't know. Right-wing radio certainly had a go at it, that's for sure. To give you an idea, and I know you don't need any more idea, but I'm going to give you one anyway. The crazies over on the right. Once you hear they were trying to blame Nancy Pelosi for the defeat of this bill, trying to take political advantage of her on this, which doesn't really break my heart. But imagine doing a conversation like this. Jonah Goldberg, Lucianne Goldberg, Spawn, and Glenn Beck having this conversation on who's to blame.
You know, Republicans ran the Congress for most of the last 8 years. And they let Barney Frank, they let Chris Dodd play the games that they played that got us into this mess. They didn't fight Bush on prescription drugs. They didn't fight Bush on all sorts of things. And now, with the place burning down around them, they've become purists about enforcing the fire code.
Well, and here's what I'm with you that I can't take the hypocrisy. I can't look at Barney Frank anymore. I can't.
He's in jail.
What'd you say?
I almost think the guy should be in jail.
Oh, I do too. I absolutely do. I think, honestly, I think we should have at least, bare minimum, we should have stockades in front of the Capitol building. Some of these people are out and out criminal on what they have done.
It is an incredibly poisonous situation. You know, in the Middle Ages, Harry Reid would have his stomach cut open and a half-starved weasel thrown in. The kind of things he's doing.
I'm glad you're not living in the dark ages now.
Imagine having that conversation. Only Glenn Beck and Jonah Goldberg would have that conversation on the air, I guess. Have your stomach cut open and a half-starved weasel put in. Gives you some ideas to the thinking of Jonah Goldberg. There's a guy that is where he is because of a blowjob. Plain and simple. Yeah, I mean that. It's the truth, isn't it? Would you ever have heard of Lucianne Goldberg or her son had it not been for that? I want to talk a little bit about politics today. And, of course, we can't talk about politics these days without bringing up the name Sarah. I'd like to ask you all a question, and I realize that none of you are running for the presidency of the United States, so certainly you and most people are forgiven if they don't know the answer to what I'm about to ask you, but if you're running for the presidency of the United States, would you not agree with me that you ought to have at least a rudimentary knowledge of American history? Since you're going to be in the executive department, and I guess since Cheney's been in, it's arguable whether or not that is part of the executive branch. He says it's not. But since you're going to be a part of the ruling class of the United States of America, and you're going to work with the other branches of government, and if you're going to work with the courts, the judicial branch, wouldn't you think you'd have a little knowledge? Wouldn't you think you... If you went to college and you graduated, wouldn't you think you would have, just by accident, run across the answer to a question that was posed to Sarah Palin the other day? I found this astonishing. Don't get me wrong. I'm no lawyer. I don't have a legal mind here at all. I am a student of history. And my knowledge of this particular subject is sorely lacking. I'm not running for president, but my God. Sarah Palin was asked if, besides Roe v. Wade, can you name another decision by the Supreme Court of the United States? And she could not. First of all, wouldn't one of us, like I said, if we were qualified or intelligent enough to be the vice president, wouldn't we know just a little more about the historic decisions of the Supreme Court than she seems to? She was asked to name another case besides Roe v. Wade, and she couldn't. And I'd say, and I'll go ahead and use a broad brush to tar people, I'd say she is representative of many of the Roe v. Wade one-issue voters, actually. But how can it be that you're a governor of a state, you're a college graduate, and you're the mayor, by the way, and I don't want to shortchange her on this, you're also the mayor of the city of Wasilla, Alaska. How could it be that you'd never heard of the Dred Scott case, for one? How could it be that you'd never heard of, the Miranda case, Miranda v. Arizona? How could it be that you wouldn't remember, and she's, of course, she wasn't very old then, but wouldn't you study this? New York Times v. the United States in 1971 about the Pentagon Papers. Wouldn't you know that one? And one, of course, that I'll always remember that I ran across by accident because I liked Harry Truman and the history of his administration, the Youngstown Sheet and Tube v. Sawyer over Harry's attempt to nationalize the steel industry. Wouldn't you at least know one of those? Wouldn't you at least know Dred Scott or Miranda? Wouldn't you? Ugh. I tell you, I'm fascinated that she didn't have an answer for that. But I am surprised. She didn't say, well, I'll find one and I'll get back to you. I'm surprised. But I really believe that a friend of mine sent me this, Matt Tebbe. Sarah Palin is a symbol of everything that's wrong with the modern United States. As a representative of our political system, she's a new low in reptilian villainy, the ultimate cynical masterwork of puppeteers like Karl Rove. But more than that, she is a horrifying symbol of how little we ask for in return for the total surrender of our political power. Not only is Sarah Palin a fraud, she is the tawdriest, most half-assed fraud imaginable. 20 floors below the lowest common denominator, a character too dumb even for daytime TV. And this country is going to eat her up, cheering her every step of the way, all because most Americans no longer have the energy to do anything but lie back and allow ourselves to be jerked off by the calculating thieves who run this grasping consumer paradise we call a nation. That's from Matt Tebbe. The great insight of the Palin VP choice is that huge chunks of the American voters no longer even demand that their candidates actually have policy positions. They simply consume them as media entertainment, rooting for or against them according to the reflective prejudices of their demographic, as they would for reality show contestants or sitcom characters. Hicks root for Hicks, moms for moms, born-agains for born-agains. And sure, there was politics in the Palin speech, but it was all either silly lies or merely incidental fluffery buttressing the theatrical performance. A classic example of what was at work here came when Palin proudly introduced her Down syndrome baby, Trig, and then stared into the camera and somberly promised parents of special needs kids that they would have a friend and advocate in the White House. This was about a half hour before she raised her hands in triumph with McCain, a man who voted against increasing funding for special needs education. Palin's charge that the government is too big and that Obama wants to grow it was similarly preposterous. Not only did her party just preside over the largest government expansion since LBJ, but Palin herself has been a typical Bush-era Republican, borrowing and spending beyond her means. Her great legacy as mayor of Wasilla was the construction of a $14.7 million hockey arena in a city with an annual budget of $20 million. Palin okayed a bond issue for the project before the land had even been secured, leading to a protracted legal mess that ultimately forced taxpayers to pay more than six times the original market price for the property. The city ended up having to seize from a private citizen using eminent domain. And better yet, Palin ended up paying for the thing with a 25% increase in the city sales tax. But in her speech, of course, Palin presented herself as the enemy of tax increases, righteously bemoaning that taxes are too high and Obama wants to raise them. Oh, Sarah, Sarah, Sarah. I think she's absolutely fascinating. I am fascinated by that whole thing. I really am. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call. 866-546-5254. We'll be back after a short break.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, following Friday night's presidential debate, MSNBC's Chris Matthews asked the Washington Post's Gene Robinson,
Gene, did it surprise you that he was so unethnic tonight, that he never once talked about the condition of African Americans in this country, never once talked about poor people?
Media Matters has noted a pattern of Matthews playing up racial politics in this election, questioning Obama's ability to connect with both white and black voters. Here's a quick flashback.
Now, the working class white voters Hillary Clinton won and Barack didn't. Can Obama now win over the regular folks, white folks? Is there anything he can do in terms of, is he too University of Chicago or too Southside Chicago for those people? Which way is he going too far?
And in the sad world of outrageous commentary, here's radio host Michael Savage on how hard it is to be him.
And I went through a sort of depression in my own life as a result of liberal social activism. They imposed affirmative action on me and stole my very birthright simply because I was white.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
You know, Republicans ran the Congress for most of the last 8 years. And they let Barney Frank, they let Chris Dodd play the games of...
We've been doing this war dance together for some
Welcome back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thank you for joining us here today on the show. Always appreciate knowing that we've got such a good, well-versed audience, intelligent. I want to bring up something very quickly. I don't know how quickly, but I want to bring up a point that was a real sore spot with me, and I had quite a conversation with the editor of the local newspaper last week over this. And by when I speak about newspaper, I guess some of you know what I'm going to talk about. Something that's happened in 70 newspapers around the country. I think the number is 70. In swing states, oddly enough. Yes, in swing states. And I'm talking about this DVD called Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West. It is putrid, obscene filth. That's all that can be said for it. It is a DVD made by a company called the Clarion Fund. They didn't actually make it. They sponsored it. It is been bannered by Fox News. It was seen on CNN and Fox News, but I guess that wasn't good enough. They had to send 28 million people in swing states a DVD of this. What it is pure hate against the Islamic community. It goes beyond the pale, trying to make every person of the Islamic faith a terrorist. In my opinion, it does a good job of it. And it was in 70 newspapers around the country, mailed out with our Sunday paper. I called the editor of the local paper, the Fort Myers News Press, and he did speak to me, which is more than I expected. And I'm assuming that he's heard many comments about this, because there were letters to the editor in the newspaper about this. And I might add, most of them positive towards it, since I live where I live in dark red country here. But the first thing, when I complained about having this sent to me in my newspaper, that the editor told me was that obviously I didn't believe in freedom of speech. And I said, "Mister, I believe in freedom of speech probably far more than you do. But this is beyond the pale." Well, his answer was, "They paid us to put this CD in the newspaper, and we believe in free speech here at the Fort Myers News Press. Therefore, we have every right to send it out." I said, "Well, I'm not saying you don't have a right to send it out. I'm saying that maybe you had a lapse in judgment by sending it out." And frankly, I said to him, I don't believe you when you say you believe in complete free speech. And he says, "We most certainly do." And I said, "All right, let's say that I'm a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and I want to put this CD about the Klan in the Sunday newspaper, and I'll pay you to do it. Would you do it?" He said, "Of course." Now, I'm thinking that's a damn lie. What do you think? You think any newspaper in the country, any respectable newspaper, would put this in, would put something in by the Klan? I don't believe so. The reason I brought this up is this Clarion Foundation, the Clarion Fund of New York City, distributed this in swing states, and are big supporters of John McCain. Something smells very rotten here. And so to further this story, I want to read you a little newspaper article from the Dayton Daily News of Dayton, Ohio. On Friday, September 26th, the end of a week in which thousands of copies of The Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West, the fear-mongering anti-Muslim documentary being distributed by the millions in swing states via DVD, inserted in major newspapers and through the U.S. mail, were distributed by mail in Ohio. A chemical irritant was sprayed through the window of the Islamic Society of Greater Dayton, where 300 people were gathered for a Ramadan prayer service. The room that the chemical was sprayed into was the room where babies and children were being kept while their mothers were engaged in prayers. This apparently is what the scare tactic political campaigning of John McCain's supporters has led to. Americans perpetrating a terrorist attack against innocent children on American soil. This after the Obsession DVD was distributed in Ohio. I am filled with disgust over this. It is propaganda of the worst kind, and they're big supporters of John McCain. Take that for what you want, but I didn't want this show to go by today without talking about it. 866-546-5254. We have the Republicans now talking about whose fault this is, this bailout, this buyout. And I went looking for some facts and figures, and sometimes figures are a little bit boring, but in this case, I don't think they are. I want to compare what has happened in Republican administrations and Democratic administrations as of late, just for the record. From 1962, the first Kennedy budget, through 2001, the last Clinton budget, presidents have prepared 40 budgets. Control of the White House was evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats, with each party preparing and submitting 20 budgets. That's why we decided to take a look at the fiscal performance of the federal government during that period. 20 budgets each. And all the dollars talked about here are adjusted for inflation, and are expressed in 1996 dollars. In the Kennedy-Johnson administration, during the 8 years of Kennedy-Johnson, the budget was in deficit for 7 years during the 8 years. The largest deficit was $110 billion. The only surplus was $13.4 billion in 1969. The Kennedy-Johnson budgets added $250 billion to the national debt and averaged a budget deficit of $31.6 billion. During the Nixon-Ford years, the Nixon-Ford budgets add another $702 billion to the national debt and averaged a yearly deficit of $87 billion. During the Carter years, the Carter budgets added $482 billion to the national debt and the budget deficits of $120 billion. Those were tough times. But not nearly as tough as the Reagan years. The Reagan years ran budget deficits in every one of its 8 years. The lowest deficit was $188 billion. The lowest deficit was $188 billion. Jimmy Carter's averaged $120 billion deficit, and the lowest one during the Reagan administration was $188 billion, and the highest was $311 billion. Annual average deficits, $242 billion in the Reagan administration, as compared to Jimmy Carter's 120, double the budget deficit during the Reagan years. Bush won. His budget deficits averaged more than Reagan's at $289 billion and added $1 trillion to the national debt. The Clinton years paid down a net $14.2 billion of the national debt and averaged a surplus of $1.78 billion. So, what this all adds up to is, in the 20 years of budgets prepared by Republican presidents during that time, they increased the national debt by $3.8 trillion, and don't forget, this is not including Junior, And the average yearly deficit under Republican budgets was $190 billion. During the 20 years of budgets prepared by the Democratic presidents, they increased the national debt by $719 billion. That's what, a fifth of what the Republicans did? And the average yearly deficit under Democratic budgets was $36 billion, one-fifth of what it was under Republicans. So you tell me, who knows how to govern? Who knows how to govern? And when you throw in the Junior Bush figures in on top of that, they're truly horrifying, let me tell you. Truly horrifying. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here on the program today. What are your ideas about having a wealth tax here in the country? Oh, I know. I can hear the Republicans squirming right now. A wealth tax. But you'll have to admit, a lot of the debate on Wall Street, the bailout or buyout, revolves around the strings that are attached to the mountain of cash, which, according to economists, is necessary to stabilize the credit markets. And Paulson's asking for a blank check, and the Bush is along asking for a blank check, and the Democrats are going along, 140 of them, with this blank check. I still have not heard a consensus from my listeners on how to feel about this bailout. I've gotten many, many emails over it. And I must say, I've yet to receive one, even one, in support of the bailout. I'm sure some of you must support it, but I've yet to get one. But I really think that it's time to make those people who have made this mountain of money on the backs of all the working people in this country, I think it's time to make them pay the piper. And what I mean by that is, I don't think one single penny, if this bailout gets passed, I don't think a penny of it ought to come from the 99% of the Americans who are the victims of Wall Street. And yes, I do mean victims. All of it. All of it should come from the outrageous amount of assets controlled by the upper 1% of the people. And how can this be done? It can be done by instituting a wealth tax on accumulated assets. And pick a figure above what? 10 million? 20 million? There's something like 47,000 people in this country now. 47,000, I believe the number is, worth over $20 million. And it's probably going to take an economist or probably a whole truckload of economists to figure out exactly, with some sort of precision, the funds that are available, because a lot of these folks have their intangible wealth investment in bonds and stock securities and so forth. But even after saying that, it's obvious that the total is by now almost unimaginably huge, after we've had a generation of disgracefully low marginal income tax rates, tax loopholes, high corporate profits, and most notably, these completely unreasonable executive compensations. I had somebody tell me the other day that I didn't know what I was talking about, and Warren Buffett said that he believed that most executives in this country, the rich people like himself, pay a far lower percentage of their income tax. Their income is taxed, as did his secretary. And somebody said, well, Guy, you just don't know what you're talking about on that. You just don't know. Well, I see Warren Buffett has offered $1 million to anybody that could prove otherwise. I like that. I like Warren Buffett. I'm a big fan of Warren Buffett. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two.
Ninja.
what won't they do in this country to take advantage of the working folks? What won't they do? I guess that's a better question than what they will do. I guess what's off limits? We're seeing stories right now of this melamine that's in the milk causing tragic consequences to the children in China. And things like that have happened in this country, too, where people have been greedy and God, I remember one story, a tragic story about a doctor in Kansas City, I believe it was, who was diluting cancer medicine in order to make more money off of it, but he'd have more to sell. Despicable story indeed. He is prosecuted in prison for that right now, but greed has infected society just about every place you can think of on this earth. And we, though we see our country as a little differently than a lot of people do, we've got just as much greed, perhaps more, here in this country. Greed seems to breed more greed, and that's probably why we've got a little more of it than most people in the country do. But it is shameful. It's extremely shameful. And John, one of my listeners, John, brought up a Supreme Court case. By the way, I'm ashamed of the fact I didn't think of this one when I was talking to you a while ago. Brown versus the Board of Education, one of the most famous Supreme Court cases. So I'm sure we could all think of a few more. But poor Sarah. Sarah. I couldn't even think of one. So I guess she wins the booby prize for the day. What's that debate going to be like, do you think? Are we being set up for something terrible here, those of us on the Democratic side? Will Sarah come out with a suit of armor on and just be fully versed on all the issues and be able to answer any question? Gwen Ifill, I guess, is going to run the thing. I can't imagine, I just can't imagine that she's going to be able to stand up to Joe Biden in this. And I agree with the experts that say that Joe shouldn't be condescending and all that. And he's very good. Joe's very good. He can be condescending and he loves to get up and talk in your face. He won't have that opportunity to do that at the debate. But Joe's a smart guy. And I think he'll be well prepared for this. I'm trying to think. I know who his debating partner is. He's practicing. I forget where it is. Maybe in Maryland or wherever it is. Jennifer Granholm of Michigan is standing in for Palin in his debate practice. And I really believe that one of the first things that should be done as he should come out and make a statement saying, the ladies that have run for office have asked that they don't be treated in a sexist way, and I know that Governor Palin feels that way, and I'm going to honor that tonight, and I'm going to treat her like anybody else. And I know that's what she expects, and I know that's what she wants me to do. Put the onus over on her. And therefore, I'm not going to yell and scream or anything like that, but I'm going to be just as tough as I would with any man. Do you suppose that will wash? I don't know. But I'm having a hard time thinking of any way, shape, or form that Palin could come out of this thing not just beaten up really badly. And Joe wouldn't have to do the beating. She probably will do it to herself. And I like the idea I heard from one person, if Joe's asked a question, give a very brief answer, which he's not good at, but give a very brief answer and say, what do you think, Sarah? And throw it over to her. I can't imagine that she could or would even want to bring up foreign policy with Joe Biden. That's really hard for me to imagine that she can compete with us. So it's going to be interesting. That's what, Thursday night? Another night we'll get to stay up and watch the debate. Should be interesting. Frankly, I can't wait to see it. I don't know that I'll watch any more of the McCain-Obama debates, if they're going to be anything like that first one. I was so god-awful bored, I didn't know what to do. Well, as always, thanks for listening to the Guy James Show today. Appreciate having you along. Don't forget, this is a listener-supported program. Thanks to Billy Sears, music director. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Stay tuned for Mark Levine. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, guys.